You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Well, maybe we need two jackhammers to solve these issues. We're going to try here in the Massive Report podcast tonight. As always, brought to you by our friends at Saucy Brew Works. Ori, we're not there tonight. We hope to be back there soon, but what can we expect to see when we return?
Well, when you walk into Saucy Brew Works, you know you're walking into the best bar in Columbus, and you're walking into the best place on earth, because Saucy Brew Works is the best bar in Columbus and place to be in the world. Saucy Brew Works, if your brew works, then why not be saucy with it? Have some beer, have some food on 443 West 3rd Avenue. Go watch some sports there soon. European soccer's back this weekend.
This weekend. Are they the Aston Villa bar? Because Jack Grealish has left, so yeah, maybe no they're now Jack the Grealish. Man City. you know what? Let's, at the end, I hope you guys will be into this, and you'll educate me, because it doesn't take long for the brain to just sort of forget about the last season, and now the new season is starting on Saturday. So perhaps at the end of the podcast here, we can just kind of kick around some Premier League thoughts, because all of a sudden I'm really excited to sit down and watch some games this weekend.
Sure.
We'll see what you guys think. We'll do that at the end.
Yeah, gotta get through the crew first, which has not been the best right now.
Oh boy, I don't know what to do. And it came on like a tsunami, Alex. You were at the DC game. You were not at the Atlanta game. But do you get a feeling that, I don't know, were you guys booing at halftime at the DC United game? Because I got to be honest, I was so mad, I stood up and I booed. And my wife looked up at me and go, why are you doing that? I'm like, hey, we paid good money for these seats. That was a crap performance. I'm going to boo. I'm going to boo through my mask. Alex, what was the feeling on the other side of the pitch? I was on the south end. You were in Nordic. What was the feeling over there?
I mean, I think booing's always a good reaction to things, right? I think in general, this is a weird season. This has been a weird year. Last year was weird too. But this is like quickly becoming another weird year. I don't know what's going on with this team. And I think that applies to the last couple of games. And I'm hoping that it's like we were missing a bunch of people for the Gold Cup and stuff like that. And like as these guys get back and start to gel again with the rest of their squad, like maybe things will get sorted out. But I mean, we are talking about some truly abysmal performances recently. Just like terrible, like reminding us of some other teams in this league that, you know, will not be named here in terms of like how bad they played, especially defensively. And so I didn't boo, but like, I wouldn't blame anybody who did boo. I think booing in this situation is an appropriate response to the fact that they're not playing to the level they need to play to get the job done. And it sucks that we've got this new stadium.
Yeah.
We're trying to bring all these new fans in. And people want to go there and see this new team for the first time. And, you know, some of these people, first time in a decade, and they go there to watch the team get slapped around for 2 hours. It's pathetic.
Well, I think, you know, we're talking about a small sample size here. But are we, Ori? Because I was looking at this, the chart. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's like it plots out who's good and who's lucky.
Yes, I saw that one.
And I don't know how much credence you put into that. You can go deep into the jungle on analytics in any sport now. But I found it interesting that Columbus Crew and Portland Timbers were the two luckiest teams in the league in terms of results. And when you rely on that, it's a regression positive, regression negative. But sooner or later, you're going to regress to whatever you are. Mm-hmm. And certainly that's true in baseball because the season is so long. But the season is long enough in MLS that sooner or later you can be exposed. What's been exposed the last three games?
I just think seeing the way that the other teams have played in these matches compared to the Crew, I mean, I would say that the Crew's performances themselves have obviously been very poor in these last three games. They haven't lost three straight since July of 2019. I think Steve Cirque tweeted it that it's been maybe 20 some years since the Crew conceded at least three goals in three straight games, something crazy like that. So it's a historically bad run of form in the 26 years of this club. But, you know, just the way that Caleb Porter's talked about the team after these performances and the way the games have gone and the way the players have discussed it, you know, they take the full responsibility. And the fact that you see in all these games, they go down early because of a defensive mistake in against Atlanta, 5 minutes in. And that's something Caleb Porter said immediately in the press conference. You cannot expect to win a game or get a performance going when you give up the first chance that your opponent has. Atlanta's first chance of the game was in that fifth minute. Barco just cleaned through in the midfield, something he was able to do throughout the course on Saturday. He just had nobody coming after him. The midfielders were not pressuring him. He had all the space in the world to run towards the box. Beautiful back here by Bello, but you can see Jonathan Mensah ball watching. You can see the defense was not set. And Atlanta was able to score. And, you know, you got to get that right mindset in early in the game. Because right now, conceding these early goals and going down 2-0 specifically for this team in the first half has been catastrophic for them. And Pedro Sanders, like, it's like we start playing when we're down 2-0, which you can't have. You know, since the new stadium is open, the Crew has played 8 games, and in 5 of them, they've gone down 2-0 in the first half.
That's now, a crazy stat.
Two of them were comebacks.
That is a crazy stat. Yeah,
two of them were comebacks against New England and Cincinnati, where I think the defense sort of picked things up in the second half and started to perform a little bit better. And at the same time, there was also some luck that helps too. In this Atlanta game specifically, the luck wasn't on their side, you know. The officiating was somewhat questionable. There was some right calls that were made, but at some point you got to think, you know, it's unlucky to have a team get, you know, 2 penalties called against them and have 2 goals come back for VAR. You know, even though I would probably say that 3 of the 4 were probably correct calls, the mentality that gets to the team from that, it can seep in and start to affect your performances. It maybe sinks the confidence because it's like, nothing's going our way. Yeah, people have played soccer games, even in rec leagues, where it's like you get penalties called on you, the person calls you offside, and it's like, well, what the hell am I supposed to do?
Alex, we surrendered 2 penalties. I don't know if that's where you're going, but we surrendered 2 penalties in the Atlanta game, and they were both warranted, I think.
Well, I think that the second one was iffy. If you want my opinion, I think the first one was a penalty. The second one, I think, was like a coin toss. I've seen it given to me. It was a weak penalty. I think one thing that kind of I've been kicking around in my head. I mean, that surface is still pretty new. That grass has not really like been able to root in yet. I wonder if the team is struggling with that because they play like a very quick passing, possession-based system, and I wonder if like the poor surface hurts them more than it hurts the opposing team, or if they're just not quite used to the way it's playing yet. I'm not quite sure, but like I cannot figure out what's going on. Like, I don't know if it's psychological. Like, I don't know if they need to get one of these like sports psychologist guys in there to like sort it out. I'm hoping like as we, you know, get everybody back and everybody starts to kind of reform as a unit again, maybe that'll help too. But I mean, really pathetic performances, even though I thought that penalty was soft. Like, we deserve to lose that game. I mean, you know,
the last three games, they were the worst team.
Yeah.
Well, I think, and I can see what you're saying about the penalty calls. But to me, it's almost like if you play like that, that's what's going to happen because you almost seem desperate. The officiating, I mean, it is what it is in this league. I try to push it out of my mind at this point because it's substandard. I'm more upset about the one offsides call against Atlanta that was very borderline, Ori, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Diaz goal was actually a goal. They looked at it again. MLS did a piece. They always do a piece every week about sort of the controversial decisions that happen every week in the league. So they were looking at that offside, and you pause it at the right time. on Bally Sports, the angle was a little bit off. It was tough to see initially on the TV replay. But when you looked at it again from a different angle, Diaz was onside. And what Caleb Porter said, and I agree with him, is that, first of all, the assistant referee is not in the correct position.
Right. And that's been a problem forever in this league.
Right. And the AR, in my opinion, if you're an assistant referee and not in the right position, I mean, the way that I would play it, I always try and give the benefit of the doubt to the attacker. Because if they don't waive that as offside, they leave it as a goal, they can review it. They can look back on it. That's the whole point of VAR.
Yeah.
But when the whole not clear and obvious comes into play, Caleb Porter said in that situation, if the flag is not raised initially, because it's not clear and obvious enough to potentially overturn, then it probably stays a goal. Whereas the opposite happened. They put the flag up because it's not clear and obvious enough to see that it was onside rather than off, then they're going to determine that it wasn't a goal. So that to me is also interesting that the flag is setting that precedent. So in a way, the assistant referee still has in that moment, the AR had the final say. Because no matter if they put the flag up or didn't put the flag up, whatever the call was going to be the call because it was too close to determine if it was clear and obvious enough to be offside or on, which I think is a good thing in a way because you prevent the whole little lines that are drawn in the Premier League with the toes that are offside. But yeah, if the flag doesn't go up, that's probably a goal.
But it's still, MLS has different broadcast standards for different matches. If it's Galaxy and LAFC on ESPN on a Sunday night or whatever, they're going to have more cameras, more crew there than we're going to have with the crew in Atlanta on a Saturday night in Columbus in the middle of the summer. You're not going to have all those cameras, and we didn't have the angle to make the call properly. And the assistant made the wrong call. And they're like, well, I don't know. And they just throw their hands in the air. And so that there's no... Yeah, I was way more pissed off about that than anything.
Especially because someone like Luis Diaz, who early on in that game, you saw was, you know, struggling with his composure in the box, had a couple of chances that were close to hitting the roof at lower.com field. And then he gets this breakaway on this great combination play in the midfield. He has a clean breakaway and he has a really good finish past Brad Guzan. And that's just the kind of thing Luis Diaz needs to get his confidence up. We saw it after he scored in the Toronto game. He was playing really well before going off to Costa Rica international duty. And it's a shame that he got injured during that game. He's going to be day to day now, but that I think makes sense, especially also with Derek Etienne. And I asked Caleb Porter about this. You see two guys in Diaz and Etienne get goals, they get disallowed, but even still, they were able to find the space. They're able to finish the chance. Does that give the offense a little more confidence that they can have different areas of goal scorers? And I think a positive about the past week of games, Kevin Molino got his first goal. We saw Pedro Santos get two goals in the last three games. So you're starting to see other areas of the pitch where people are scoring goals. Jonathan Mensah got his second goal against Atlanta this season off of a corner kick header. And that's really good for this team. The offense is creating some chances in open play, looking smoother. They just can't look smoother when they're down 2-0. They have to do that at the beginning of a game. And every time the crew has scored first this season, which is five times, they've won. So that to me is the most important thing they have to do. Score first.
Alex, this is not a metric that I'm aware of, but blasting the ball 15 feet over the goal should be a statistic because it tells me that a team is frustrated. I saw a lot of really crappy low chance shots over the last few games. I don't know if you're seeing that, but that's what I'm seeing.
Yeah, it seems like there's like a lack of composure, right? It's really difficult. I mean, I think that we haven't seen, I mean, I guess at times we did with Berhalter, right, where the team would look really flustered and you could just kind of tell that they weren't thinking straight. You haven't really seen that with Porter teams as much, I feel like, but last few games, it's just looked like they are not all on the same page, like just dumb mistakes, you know, bad shots, bad movement, like just a lot of problems going on. And like, I can't pinpoint where it started or like what the cause was, but it feels like we've been on the decline for maybe five games now, four or five games. I don't know. It's concerning. And I mean, the window's closed. So it's not like we can go in and get any reinforcements. Like, this is what we're rolling with for the most part. And I just don't know, like, what it's going to take to get out of it. And maybe, you know, next game they'll pull out of it and it'll be like nothing happened. But this does not seem like a confident Crew team. And they're giving up so many goals that it really does have me worried for, like, you know, what does the postseason look like? Where is the ceiling for this year's team? Like, probably not that high if they keep playing like this.
Ori, it's shocking the amount of goals we've given up for this team. That was our rock. Defending, goalkeeping. Yep. There's only so much that Eloy Room can do. And the first goal, and I don't know, you know, I'm taking a brief moment in time and trying to understand it in the larger sense, but do we have a problem in the midfield allowing too much space?
Potentially. I think it's always hard when you have a two central midfield setup. You have to have your wingers sort of come back and defend a little bit more. And that's something Caleb Porter demands from his wingers in that 4-2-3-1. Have to defend more. So, you know, somebody like Luis Diaz, he does a good job, I think, coming back on defense. He's always running back and trying to, you know, mark guys and win interceptions and get tackles. Kevin Molino is the player that has always been sort of has to adapt more to the Crew tactic. He's a very methodical player offensively. You can see that he likes to get the ball and slowly work his way around the space to find the open pass. But that's something he wasn't demanded of in Minnesota to come back and defend. That's something he has to do. And he's done that much better of late compared to the first, I think, two or three games that he played for the club. But at the same time, you also have a midfield two in Marlon Hairston and Darlington Nagbe. You know, neither of them are sort of a true central defensive midfielder. But I think it's just mainly, I think a mentality and a confidence thing right now. That's something that Caleb Porter mentioned. Some of the guys are just not confident. And also, you know, you look at that game, you have two natural defenders in that back line. Liam Frazier played center back over Abubakar Keita because Keita did not have his best performance on Wednesday night against DC, and Josh Williams and Vito Warmhor are still injured. So you have someone like Liam Frazier who played well, center back for sure, but he's not a center back. He's a central midfielder. Yeah. And Pedro Santos is still playing left back. So you only have two natural defenders in your back line in Mensah and Afful. And, you know, that game in these last three games where you've conceded 11 goals and you've got these uncharacteristic defensive mistakes that we've seen early in games, which just kills a team. I think, you know, those will start to correct themselves over time. If they continue on in these next couple of games, then that would be very shocking. It's very tough to see a team have a long run where their defenders are making that many individual errors so early in a match. But something that I wrote in what we learned, they need Josh Williams or Vito Warmhor back. You need to have a second natural defender in at center back. Josh Williams, for me, is the player that they are missing. He's a spiritual leader of the club.
Heartbeat.
Yeah. He's shown how good of a defender he is, had such a great season last year, had a great start to the season this year. He gets injured, and I think you really need someone like him back. Or, you know, because Keita was doing pretty well there before the DC United game. So, but, you know, obviously a young player, you don't expect him to start every game. Your second center back is probably Josh Williams. And also you can get Vito Warmhor in there, better passer of the ball in that defensive line. But at the same time, he's a natural defender. They need a natural defender at center back. And they really also probably need someone like Milton Valenzuela back. Hopefully he's not injured too long because he's a big piece missing for this team. They had him throughout most of last season, and that was huge for the Columbus Crew.
Absolutely. He can't seem to stay healthy. And I just sort of, whenever Milton plays, I'm like, oh, Bill's playing. That's cool. I mean, Liam Frazier playing central defense, Alex, when I saw that, I'm like, what? He did do a good job, but it's not optimal. And really, at the end of the day, after, you know, Vito's form when he was fit and playing was not good. And at this point, I really trust Josh to be Jonathan's sidekick you know, if you want to talk about it like a crime fighting team or whatever, I trust him in that role more than anyone else. And Bubba's going to get there. I really believe that, but he's not there yet. He's not consistent. Josh Williams is that consistent figure in that spot. And how important is it to you, Alex, to see him back in the starting 11 again?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Vito, just his positional awareness when he came back from injury was not there. I mean, he's, when he was playing, I mean, he lost attackers like crazy. Just did not seem to know where Mensa was, didn't seem to know where he was, didn't seem to know where the guy he was supposed to be marking was. Like, it was not good. And like you said, I mean, Kata is going to get there. But Kata is still a kid. And, you know, in normal times, Kata would only be playing in, you know, scrimmage matches and like Open Cup, right? So he's going to need more time to kind of develop into the player that we know he's going to be, you know. And it's weird to say a couple years ago. I mean, I don't think people would have thought of Josh Williams as like a defender that you would miss if he's out injured. But I mean, he's really become a great MLS defender, very, very solid, reliable player. And we miss him like crazy. And I don't think that we've really got a suitable replacement for him right now. Like, I have to think once the season is over, Vito's time in Columbus is probably over. I mean, when you look at his salary and what kind of impact he's able to make, but they need to go out and they need to get somebody who can fill in for Josh, because Josh has always had injury issues. He's always had kind of nagging problems that'll keep him out here and there. And I just feel like whenever he is out now, there's a big gap there that we are having a lot of trouble filling. I don't think Frazier's the answer. I don't think we have an answer.
Well, Ori, I think this team has really leaned on those two central defenders, and certainly it starts with Jonathan. And we've seen when you have this mix and match in the back that, even though, you know, I look at Pedro and I go, I'd like him back there. But I think maybe, Ori, that we miss a guy that we've kind of forgotten about because he's been out for so long, Artur.
Yeah. And Artur's going to be out for a lot longer. He's going to be out for 10 to 12 weeks. So the earliest he can return is probably around late October. So he could come back maybe for those last few regular season games. If the Crew makes the playoffs, then he would probably be available for postseason matches. But yeah, having Artur is huge for this team. And I think in the absence of Artur, they found someone in Marlon Hairston that fits that role well, but he's not the same player, of course. So you have to sort of try and adapt to that. But central midfield, you have someone like Hairston. You can fill in with Perry Kitchen as well. He's got an injury now too. He's kind of been injury prone this season. He hasn't really played too much. And then you have Liam Frazier, I think, is fit in pretty well. Loney from Toronto FC on the Canadian senior team. Got some minutes in the Gold Cup, probably will get minutes in the World Cup qualifiers. And he's a solid central midfield option too. But Artur is kind of the perfect player to complement Nagby. Artur, a lot of the times when he plays, he steps in the back, sort of a third center back, as they're trying to pass out of possession. When they control the game, control the tempo of the match, he's a very good defender in midfield. And he's the perfect player for Nagby, because Nagby can just continue to push forward and attack, which he's so good at, finding the space forward into the midfield and near the box. So not having Artur has certainly not been the best for the Columbus Crew, but I think they've found suitable players that can play in the central midfield position. I mean, I think the midfield has not been the biggest issue. I think when you think about the Crew this season, most people point to the lack of open play goals and the lack of goal scoring from this team. And I think that's fair enough. It's something they struggled with early in the season. The chance creation has certainly improved over the last month compared to what they were doing in the spring and early summer. But right now, the main thing is they're going down early. The defense is making mistakes and they're losing games within the first 20, 25 minutes. And that can't happen. And if that continues to happen, then they're not going to make the playoffs. But if they can fix that, defense mentality is strong. They're strong defensively within the first 20, 25 minutes of the match, and the offense is scoring, then they start to get back on the right track, because most of the national fans, media, and MLS, they expected, they had high expectations for this team with the amount of depth, and those expectations have not been met. They expected the Columbus Crew to blitz through these teams, play great soccer. Injuries and call-ups have taken their toll. You know, they haven't been able to have a consistent roster throughout the season, and important pieces like Artur and Josh Williams. I think losing Aiden Morris was big too, because that's another guy that complements Nagbe really, really well. So it's been a tough road for the Columbus Crew. It's been a tough three games, but I think now you have a good opportunity to sort of pick things back up here in August going into September. I think the offense is looking up. Now it's just about the defense getting their confidence back.
Alex, I've been disturbed by, and I know that, you know, the different games, different teams have different philosophies as far as possessing the ball. But when we fall behind, it seems like our opponents are perfectly comfortable with us having the ball at the top of the box. And I've seen great organization from our opponents in letting us knock it around, and not, they've not given us any good looks at all. I don't know what you're seeing, but I'm seeing a lot of, you know, rope-a-dope from the Crew, and then they fire the ball over the net, and that's it. You know, we're not being creative at the top of the box.
Yeah, I think it's, again, kind of goes back to that lack of confidence, right? I mean, other teams are not playing us scared of what we're going to throw at them right now. They are very, very comfortable to just play their game and to go in with, you know, their game plan and just execute on it. And I don't think that we have the confidence to go in there and boss anybody around right now either. So, you know, I don't know if that's a side effect of the fact that we're not finishing chances. I think it's probably more just like general lack of confidence and other teams coming into Columbus and thinking that they can get 3 points, right? You know, and I wouldn't blame them. If I were a fan of another team and I had Columbus on the map, you know, or on the schedule, I'd be looking at them being like, oh, they've given up how many goals in the last couple games? Like, all right, we can grab a result here, you know? I'm sure the players are feeling that too. So I don't know what needs to happen to like turn this around, to be totally honest with you. Like, I can't remember a team where I felt like they were as demoralized as this Crew team was. Like, even seeing Mensah coming out, right, and talking about like how, you know, he's not playing up to his level. Like, even our captain's not super confident, right? Like, as much as I like him owning mistakes and things like that, it's like the sentiment that you get from that team is they know they're down and out right now. And I just hope that someone has an idea on how to turn it around. But I haven't seen any sort of improvement game to game from this club in a couple of games now. It just seems like we're regressing from where we were earlier in the season, and that's super concerning.
Well, maybe Ori is just as simple, and I'm oversimplifying here, I know, but Jossie hasn't been back for that long, and I feel better, but he's on the pitch. I think BWP is probably, you know, he's on very much the latter days of his career. He doesn't scare anyone, and that saddens me to say, because I was really looking forward to seeing him play for us. You know, Hurtado's not the, I mean, we really, just like the U.S. national team, they're like, who's our striker? We have our striker, and he's back now. And when he's on the field, he's a difference maker. And maybe it's just as simple as him just being back full time. I don't know.
I just don't think it is. I mean, if you look at the last, we've given up 11 goals in the last three games. Yeah, like, yeah, that is, giving up 11 goals in the last three games is not a problem that Jossie Zardes is going to fix. As much as I would like him to, you know, he's not going to score three goals a game to compensate for that. Like, yeah, he's just not going to.
I think the offense has been pretty good in the past week. I mean, this was a stretch of 8 days with three games, remember. So there's a lot to be said about stamina and rotation and that kind of stuff. And in some moments we've seen the Crew thrive in those moments, but in this case they did not. And they kind of just, you know, took a big roller coaster, went down a big hill and just collapsed on itself with these results. But offensively, I think the team is playing a little more creatively. They just can't be 2-0 down after 20 minutes. It's the defense that has to improve over the next couple of weeks.
Man, I can't get my head around having to have this conversation. It's just like we're talking about it, Alex. It's like we're talking about FC Cincinnati. I mean, it's been so stunning, the collapse of our defense, that I don't even know how to explain it. Maybe we just move forward.
And I mean, it's Major League Soccer, so they could very easily turn it around in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, this league is so random. I mean, my God, DC's beating Toronto 7-1. Chicago lost to Nashville 5-1, and then Chicago goes ahead and beats the Red Bulls. And this league doesn't make any sense most of the time.
I don't feel like this team has looked great since that game against Cincinnati, actually. I think that was like the first game where I was kind of like, ooh, we are not getting 3 points against Cincy. Like, what's going on here? You know, and since then, it's been like, I mean, the New York City game got the result there, got a result against Atlanta, but it's been spotty, right? It hasn't been dominant performances. I don't know. I hope that Porter's got a plan. I know we're down a couple people right now, but we are really hurting for a good result, and hopefully, you know, we'll have an opportunity coming up here to try to change things a little bit, you know, when we play Chicago. But we need something to go our way for sure.
All right, Ori, before we delve into Chicago, who's in and who's out this weekend?
It's probably going to be the same as this past full week of games. I would expect Perry Kitchen to probably be out. He's sort of someone we're going to watch out for on the injury list. He could be upgraded to questionable. Vito Warmhor is progressing. He's starting to think to train again with the team. He was there last week in training a little bit, so he could be potentially upgraded to be available. I wouldn't expect him to potentially start on Sunday, but having the extra day, not having a game on Saturday, but playing on Sunday, could potentially get Vito Warmhor ready. I think Josh Williams is closing in on starting to get ready as well. So both Williams and Warmhor are moving up on the injury chart, but it's probably going to be the same suspects out that have been the case for the past few weeks. No Artur and Morris, obviously, they're the long-term injuries, and still no Milton Valenzuela, probably still no Perry Kitchen, but we'll find out more this weekend to see the availability. But for the most part, they have a lot of guys available to start. Most of the first team players are available.
And Chicago filling their oats just a little bit. I mean, their last several results for them, as bad as they have been encouraging.
Very encouraging.
A 1-1 draw with Philadelphia, a 0-0 draw with NYC, beating Red Bulls in their last match. All of a sudden, you talk about the randomness of this league. Have you guys seen any of Chicago Fire? Is this real?
It could be. Go for it, Alex.
I was just going to say, I haven't watched any of their games, but it's nice to play against a team with an equally bad logo rebrand. You know, it's going to be close.
Oh, just wait. I've got a graphic coming up from Massive Report about that. It should be a bunch of fun. But yeah, it's certainly the battle of maybe the two least favorite logos in MLS for sure. The first time the team is playing since the Columbus Crew rebrand. But yeah, very encouraging for the Chicago Fire. They were playing great against the Red Bulls, specifically in the first 10 minutes when Stojanovic scored 2 goals in the first 8 minutes of the game. People were saying the Fire are looking great. And the fact of the matter is, it's probably very encouraging for the Fire to look at this Columbus Crew game and think, well, we were able to get an early lead against the Red Bulls, and the Columbus Crew are giving up early leads like it's nothing right now. So we should be able to get an early lead in this game. So I think their confidence is high. I mean, being able to pick up results against, you know, a win against the Red Bulls is key, but also tying NYC and Philly, that's a big accomplishment, especially tying Philly on the road is a big accomplishment. Philly is a very, very good team. And I think there'll be extra motivation for the Fire in this game because this will be their last home game until September 26th. They're about to start a 6-game road stretch.
Why is that?
I have no idea.
Are they moving again?
Maybe because of the Bears. I'm not sure, but yeah.
Are they going back to Toyota Park?
No. They'll play at Soldier Field. I think
whatever happened to that place.
Yeah,
doing with it now?
And once the NFL season starts, the Fire will have 4 more home games, and they're all not going to be coinciding with Bears home games, I believe. So that shouldn't be an issue. But I think, you know, being able to give the fans one last, you know, big hurrah before they go on the road for basically, you know, more than a month is going to be really important for them. And they've got players playing a lot better. So this is a much better fire squad in terms of confidence than it was when they played back at Historic Cruise Stadium all the way back in June. Yeah. So, you know, you've got Jimenez in midfield has been great. Stojanovic has been scoring goals for them recently. I think Erbers and Bornstein have come up with some good performances too. So it should be a good game. I think it should be exciting. And the last time they played in Chicago, remember the Fire went up 2-0 after 15 minutes and the Crew needed a little bit of luck on their side to get that draw, the Fataya Lache header, and then Jossie Zardes having a ball basically hit off his butt and then falling onto his foot and being able to equalize. So, you know, getting that luck back, it's important for the Crew, but this will be a tough game on the road against Chicago. You would hope also that the road trip is a lot smoother than what they dealt with New York City, having to deal with thunderstorms and dealing with bad transportation. So fingers crossed the weather in Chicago will be good enough so they can just get in there on that hour-long flight, nice and simple there, and they can settle in into the Windy City and be able to play this game on a Sunday. So it should be a good one, but don't expect an easy result for the Crew. Don't expect an easy result for the Fire. This will be a battle.
You know, what sticks out to me with the Fire, and this was true the last time we played it, is that Robert Berich really has not been a factor at all. This is a guy that in the past has impressed me anyway. I don't know. What's going on there?
It's just not been fine in the back of the net. I guess yeah. It's just something that happens to some of the scores in the league. I mean, you look at the top scores for the Chicago Fire. Luka Stojanovic has got 5. Berich with just 2 goals, you know, and I know Pat Murphy said it before, and I kind of agree with him on this. I thought he should have won MLS Newcomer of the Year over Lucas Zilberian last year. He was great last season.
Yeah. But
yeah. You know, sometimes strikers just hit that rough patch where they can't score goals. You see it all the time across all the different leagues around the world. And Berich is sort of hitting a bit of a rough patch. I mean, there, it also could be, he didn't play in the last game. I'm looking at his, I mean, he didn't start. He played 33 minutes off.
He didn't start against us either at that final game at Historic Cruise Stadium.
Yeah. He hasn't played a full 90 basically since Wednesday, the 7th of July, where he played 89 minutes against Orlando in a 3-1 win at home. So he hasn't been getting too much time. So he's probably been dealing with some injuries, but yeah, it's just interesting to see somebody who was so good last season not be as good this season. But that's a very common thing in sports to see.
Well, we're certainly catching them in good form, especially defensively. They're not, they're getting results and they're not surrendering goals. And when we saw them back in June, they just looked sad.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, we're catching them in a much better place. We really need all the points here.
Yeah.
All of them.
And now, as much as points are important for, because it's obviously going to be a 2-game road stretch against the Fire and then against the Red Bulls about 3 days later. As much as points are important, I think it's vital that they win at least one of these games. At the very least, even if they don't win one of these 2 games, at the very least, scoring first in one of these 2 games or just not having any individual defensive lapses, that will bowl over, I think, into better performances for the next 2 home games, which might be the 2 most important home games for the Columbus Crew this season against Seattle and Cincinnati. So
I got Seattle circled, Alex. I'm sure you do too.
They got to at least play well. At least.
They need to get a win.
I agree.
They need to get a win. The thing that's concerning to me is we're not winning at home, and Caleb Porter has won like 2.5 road games in his entire like professional career. So like it's not looking good, but like we need to win. They need to get a win. Like I like the idea that we just need to play well at this point is like, I don't know. It's not even like the number of losses, right? Like we're talking about a pretty short stretch here, but it's like the quality of losses and how lopsided those score lines have been that like you gotta go out there and say like, okay, that was a bad run. It's over. You know, your old Crew is back and like start getting people hyped up about it again. So I think they need a win probably against Chicago or they're going to go back to Columbus after getting slapped around in a couple games and then going on the road and not winning. That's not how you want to be heading back to to Crew Stadium. So
I think if they get a draw against Chicago or the Red Bulls and play well in the game, I think that helps. I know a win is vital, but I think got to get confidence back and perform well. I just think expecting wins on the road in MLS is always tough. Winning on the road in this league is very, very difficult. But you want to talk about an insane stat. 12 matches have been played at the new stadiums in Ohio, Lower.com Field and TQL Stadium.
Uh-oh.
One home win in 12 matches, which was the one Crew win against New York City on July 17th with the Lucas Zelarayán free kick as the winner. Kaczynski's played 7 games at their home, not won once, and the Crew have played 5 in their home, lost 2, won 1, and drawn 2. So home records in these new stadiums are not very glimmering.
That's a great stat, Ori, because it does remind you that no matter how dark things get, it's always darker in Cincinnati. So
yeah,
I appreciate that.
So let's just put this whole thing to bed. I mean, when Ola Kamara is just dancing on our grave almost a week ago, that's like, oh.
Fair enough. He didn't celebrate, which is good from him.
Well, still.
Yeah,
still love that guy.
Of all people, I do too. I wish him nothing but success, except against us. It was kind of painful. Well, we're at 6 wins, 6 draws, and 6 losses, which is disturbing as well, Alex. So I guess that'll
Friday change. The 13th, right around the corner, Brian.
Oh God, it's this week.
Oh my God. Well, everything is lining up for good or ill.
It's too bad Hell is Real is not this weekend. Could you? Yeah. They have to.
Friday the 13th, right?
Don Garber, MLS, listen, you have to schedule Hell is Real on Friday the 13th. Has to happen. It has to happen one time.
Absolutely. Well, let's make our picks and then we'll kind of look around the world a little bit before we sign off, because Premier League is starting. Messi is moving countries and moving leagues. I'll go to you first, Ori. Pick the Chicago game.
I think it ends in a draw. I'm going to say 1-1. I think defensively, Chicago is getting a lot stronger. And I think this will be the game where the Crew finally don't have the big defensive lapses. While Chicago's been playing well, this isn't an attacking team that is one of the best in MLS, and the Crew defense, I think, will be able to go into that game a little more confidently, knowing that the Fire is not a team that excels a lot offensively. But I think winning on the road is tough in MLS. They've only won 2 road games this season. It's 2 more than last season, but I think it ends in a draw. I think play well, get a draw against Chicago at the minimum. You would hope that they would win at least one of these 2 road games.
All right, Alex.
My prediction is 2-1. I think the Crew are going to get it done in Chicago somehow, some way. I don't know who's going to score, but I think they're going to want to snap that losing streak and get back on track. So 2-1 win. I'm also going to make a prediction on what Bart's prediction would have been and say 3-0 Crew on behalf of Bart. I think he'll respect that. I'll message him after the recording, but absolutely. I think he would be okay with that.
Absolutely. I agree. I'm going to say 2-0 Crew. Josh Williams comes back, solidifies our defense, and Jossie scores a brace. Beat Chicago on the road, and we right the ship. That's what I'm saying. All right. Premier League, believe it or not, because the schedule has been so wonky for the last however many months we've been dealing with all this crap. But they're getting back onto their schedule Friday. The newly promoted Brentford and Arsenal kicks off the season on Friday at 3 p.m. local time.
Watch Brentford win.
You know, I I've said this on this podcast before, I love the promotion playoffs in the championship, be it last summer or normally at the end of the year in May. Those are such great matches, and they were so close a year ago and they got there. I love their manager, love their team. I don't know where they're going to, I don't have a team in the Premier League. I may pick them up. I don't know. Alex is probably going to judge me on this. Give me some reasons why that's a terrible thing to do. I don't know. Alex, is Brentford okay?
my take is that no Premier League team is okay, because Premier League is like just the mass consumption version of European soccer.
Oh, okay.
Defense is bad. Passing is subpar.
Problematic. This is Mr. Like, Serie A here. Serie A is special. They start 1 week after everybody else starts.
Listen,
there's so much to watch. I can't. It's like the Premier League is easier to follow. Okay, you get what I'm saying?
It's easier. I will give you that. I will say that I like the Brentford pick purely because it's not Arsenal. Okay. I really think that, you know, Arsenal is a special team, especially for people my age, because a lot of people my age got scammed into becoming Arsenal fans by Thierry Henry.
Pretty much. Yep.
And they've been miserable ever since. Uh-huh. It just like Manchester United fans got scammed in by Wayne Rooney, which is like, if you got scammed by Wayne Rooney, that's your own fault. First of all, I just want to say, so no, at least I have sympathy for Arsenal fans, because Thierry Henry is an incredible player. But Wayne Rooney, even in his prime, was like a, balding, you know, annoying, scandal ridden, sorry excuse for a soccer player. Sympathy there for my Manchester United friends.
So long story short,
I'm gonna get tweets about this. I'm going after everybody.
Pulling for Brentford this year. That's
fine. Be a Brentford.
I'm adopting them this year.
Yeah.
For good or ill, I'm adopting them. Ori, Liverpool is your squad. That was kind of disappointing last year, huh?
Yeah, no, with the injuries, it definitely hurt Liverpool's chances, but they crawled up. They were able to get top four back in the Champions League, and
yeah,
Van Dijk is back.
They're playing Norwich. Norwich is like,
Norwich
we're
is out, back.
We're in. We're
Guess
out,
who's on Norwich in. Now? Josh Sargent signed with Norwich City this past week, so he will now be in the exciting. Premier League.
Maybe I should support the Canaries.
Yeah, you could support the Canaries. They're usually one of those teams that's always up and down, haven't been able to consistently be in the Prem, but Liverpool's a decent squad. I mean, obviously with everybody healthy, they'll be within the top four contention, potentially title contention, but I think Man City and Chelsea are going to be the two teams people look at. Chelsea's about to sign Romelu Lukaku and get themselves a beast of a striker up front. Man City, they don't have a striker, but still probably the most probably the best overall squad in the Prem, motivated to try and win the Prem and Champions League double finally, but Chelsea being the Champions League winners and just having such a good roster. Thomas Tuchel for a full season, they're going to be very good.
How much is Christian Pulisic going to play this year?
He'll play a little bit. I know. Alex, what do you got?
Oh, I was just going to say, shout out to Chelsea for signing Lukaku and taking him out of Serie A because the Inter owners are broke and need money. And so they're going to get like $100 million in transfer fee. And then they're going to go grab another player for like $15 million and pocket the other like $80 million in that transfer fee. So thank you, Chelsea, for my most hated team other than Juventus. Very appreciated in that regard.
Yeah, Inter will get Aiden Dzeko, I think. They're looking at signing him as a striker.
Yeah, he I remember when I really wanted to sign him in 2012. So best of luck to Inter Milan with that one there.
So Grealish going to Man City as well. Aston Villa fans should feel how depressed?
They should be sad, but at the same time, it's all about what they do with the £100 million. I think that's a chunk of change that they can use very positively to make their squad very, very good. I believe they signed Emiliano Buendia from Norwich. He was the best player in the championship last season, so he could be a breath of fresh air for the Aston Villa squad and make them even better. Aston Villa was great last season, obviously Grealish being a key part, but they've got Ollie Watkins, they've got John McGinn, they still have a good squad. So the likes of Villa and Leeds, obviously teams that got into the top half of the table and were able to have exciting seasons. People are going to be looking forward to watching Leeds this season. They start against Manchester United early Saturday morning. The big game, though, for week one will be City against Tottenham. Harry Kane looking to sign a contract extension now. Doesn't look like he'll be at Man City potentially after all this craziness that's happened in the world transfer market. And we'll see with Man United with Rafael Varane and Jadon Sancho, but we all know the big story in world football. It's Lionel Messi leaving Barcelona. Yeah. Which is might be the biggest sports story of the year.
Was that expected? What went down here?
What went down essentially was Barcelona being very bankrupt and not having very much money, and seeing that financially they were not able to re-sign Messi for the amount of money they were going to re-sign him for. And
is this a lot of this stuff related to the pandemic and the interruption of
some of it? Of yes.
Revenue streams.
Yeah. Some of it. Yes. But there's other relations to Barcelona and Real Madrid's financial misdeeds, and also just the amount of debt that they're in. What do you got, Alex?
Well, I think that there might be some backroom shenanigans as well with this one. So,
tell.
Yeah, so from what Barcelona said, they had an agreement with Lionel Messi in place. He was going to reduce his contract by 50%, and he was going to spread out the 50% that he was going to be paid over, I think it was like 6 years or something like that. Yeah. So they would really only be paying him a fraction of his wages every year. And so from a financial perspective, it still would have been beneficial for Barcelona to keep him. Everything was agreed. And Javier Tebas, who's the president of Liga BBVA in La Liga in Spain, basically would not authorize the transfer on the grounds of the financial situation of Barcelona. But what a lot of people have said is that there were conversations in back rooms between Real Madrid, Barcelona, and Tebas, basically saying that we will not authorize the contract extension for Lionel Messi unless you give up any hopes of ever doing a Super League. La Liga just signed a deal with a major, like basically a hedge fund, like an investment firm.
Yeah.
And they purchased 10% of La Liga rights for the next 50 years. And the idea is that like all of the clubs have to sign on and basically agree to still be playing in La Liga 50 years from now, in like all the strings that come attached with that. Right.
50 years.
So they're basically saying like, you can't do a Super League for 50 years if you sign this deal. And if you don't sign the deal, we're not going to give you Messi. And Barca was like, we're not going to play this game with you. Like we're not going to do this. And so they could not come to an agreement, and they had to let Messi walk. The funniest thing to me is that like La Liga is basically like, well, we can't authorize this from a financial fair play standpoint. And then Messi goes to, you know, the most financially fair team ever, which is Paris Saint-Germain, who have like, they spend like $1 billion a year and then like figure it out because they've got like oil money coming in. They're like, oh yeah, no, Qatar is buying our sponsorship rights for $50 billion. Like, it's a totally legit deal. It's not fake at all. It's not moving money from, you know, it's right. A giant shell game.
But Messi and Wijnaldum and Donnarumma and all these players PSG have signed, they've all been free transfers because they're all out of contract and free agents.
Messi's earning 30 million euros a year.
Right, the wage has to be paid, yes.
Free transfers. But the thing about PSG in particular that bugs me, and again, this all goes back to Super League, is that the reason they're never going to get in any trouble with the Super League or with financial fair play is because financial fair play is a UEFA instrument used to punish teams who go against them. And the one team that blocked the Super League was PSG. And the owner of PSG now sits on like the board of governors for UEFA or whatever. So they're untouchable. And they can do whatever they want, but who's not on is Barcelona. So
yeah, Real Madrid, super, Barca, super Juve, blacklisted basically.
Yeah, super, super sad situation. You know, to me, it's like one of the most disturbing things that I've ever seen in my history as a soccer fan. Like I remember being absolutely gutted when AC Milan sold Kaká right after he won the Ballon d'Or. They sold him for 65 million euros. Now you got a dude like Jack Grealish, who's a good player, but is not a Ballon d'Or winner, going for double that, right? And you got guys like Lionel Messi who really want to retire with their club and are willing to cut their wages by like 75%, and you're not going to let him re-sign with your team because of like some sort of politics crap that's happening at the league level. It's so depressing, but it all boils down to money. Now you're getting these big investment firms in there. You've got all these investment firms owning teams like my team, AC Milan, is owned by Elliott Management Group. Ori's team is owned by Fenway Sports Group. Like everything is about profit now. And it's just the kind of the way the world is. So it sucks, well, but wish Messi nothing but the best against, you know, whoever they're playing, Bordeaux or whatever. That's going to be fun. Can't wait to see that.
Who made money during the pandemic? Billionaires. They have so much stupid money, they don't know what to do with it all. And that's, there's so much cash floating around, and it distorts everything. It does, you know?
Well,
and it's sad.
Messi and Neymar and Mbappe, best front three in football.
Oh,
best could be so fun to watch that team play.
Maybe the best front three ever. I think if you look at like 89, 90 AC Milan, when you had Van Basten, Rijkaard.
All right. Who is this I'm supposed to be watching?
A PSG.
Oh, PSG. Okay.
Right. Yeah. Well, we're talking
where
about
where do I find that?
Well, Ligue 1 is one of the only European leagues that doesn't have like a big US TV deal. So their games are on beIN Sports, which is the biggest sports channel in Africa and in the Middle East, but it's not big in the United States. So
go Brentford.
The best chances to watch Messi in the United States is on Paramount Plus in the Champions League, which PSG will be the favorites to win the Champions League now that they have Messi, Neymar, Mbappe, and a ridiculously good team.
Go Brentford. Illegal streams. Illegal streams.
Reddit takes those down now.
I don't want a virus.
He doesn't want a virus.
On my computer. I probably
he doesn't want his computer to get COVID.
I'm old. I only have so much time to watch so much stuff. And that goes back to the Premier League. It's just so easy to find. So go Bees.
Brian.
Go Brentford Bees.
Yeah, Brian, I would never watch an illegal stream, but as a journalist, a professional soccer journalist who takes my job very seriously, from the research that I've done, I believe that you can find streams without getting viruses. So well,
if you don't want to get a virus and you don't want to get the cable package with beIN Sport, they post the Liga highlights all the time. So you just go on YouTube, watch some Lionel Messi PSG highlights, all and right. There you go.
There's so much. All right, we got to wrap this up. You guys, I don't know whether you've got me excited for the international season or depressed. I was kind of looking forward to it, but now
it's more fun than talking about the crew.
All I can see are these hedge fund douchebags sitting around a conference table, and that bums me out. These people have way too much power.
Same thing in Major League Soccer, my friend.
It's the same thing everywhere. It's people with money.
Yeah, it's
a bunch of Anthony Precourts with actual money.
People with stupid money, and they don't know what to do with it. That's the way of the world, fellas. All right, we got to go. Hopefully, we'll be talking about a win next week. We'll be looking ahead to better days forward with our Columbus crew. For Ari, for Alex, and for everyone who did not show up tonight in the support podcast, which is a majority of our cast of characters. Thank you for listening. Ori, give some love to Saucy Brewers.
Yeah, the best place to spend your stupid hard-earned money is buying food and beer at Saucy Brewworks. It's the best bar in Columbus. It's the best place to be in the world. Go to 443 West 3rd Avenue, because if your brew works, then you should be saucy with it. So if your wallet works, be saucy with it. Go to Saucy Brewworks. Have some good food. Have some good beer. Have some good times. Go down there. Saucy Brewworks.
All right. Thank you. We'll talk to you next week here in the Massive Report Podcast. Thanks for listening.